Welcome to Plodcast. Discover, experience and connect to the people and work of the Metropolitan Police Service in Kingston, Merton, Richmond and Wandsworth.
Episode 2, Claire, reporting for duty.
Hello. Yes, we are here for, this is our first official episode though. Our last one was a bit of a tease, a bit of a taster to set the scene. This time round, we are actually going full into our first official.
Okay, so is this one or two then?
It's two, technically.
It's two,
speaking,
okay.
Yeah. It's two.
Claire, I can see you've got your list in front of you. What's on the list?
Yes, well, I have a list for a couple of things. It's one to talk about, but also to cover a few things from last episode that we put out. So the hello. We did have a few comments on where that's from. Sarah actually emailed in saying it was from Dixon and Doc Green.
I think that's Dixon of Doc
of
Green.
Dixon of Doc Green. Dixon of Doc Green.
Well,
bit of a tongue twister, that, isn't it?
Dixon of Doc Green.
Off or of?
Off, as in that's where he was.
Oh.
Let's start that bit again. Let's start. So, Claire, what's on your list?
Well, my list I've separated into two sections. One, to cover some bits from last episode, but also to cover some things for this episode. I'm going to cover first the hello that I said in our first episode. And I asked people to comment. We had a few suggestions about what it was, and Sarah actually emailed in to say it was Dixon of Doc Green, which was more of a hello, what's going on here then, I believe.
Claire, that was an awful accent.
Well, it was. How was it?
What was that?
Hello, what's going on here then? That's what it is.
Is it?
That's what he says.
Okay.
It wasn't a hello from, what was that called?
Hello. Oh. It was only two. It wasn't three, Claire.
Oh, well, I'm getting confused. Anyway, I like her suggestion more than what it was actually for. The correct answer was, it was from RuPaul. He says, hello, because I said it in a different way, but I'm actually going to steal Sarah's idea of Dixon Doc Green.
Police related. So,
well, it makes actually complete and more sense than what mine than what my one done.
We'll claim that one.
Yeah, so thank you, Sarah. I'm going to steal that as my own, and Dixon of Doc Green. We're now on to episode number two. So episode one was filmed in lockdown, so it's now a little bit easier. We've about been able to have some guests actually coming in with us. We are COVID compliant. We are all a certain distance away, and all the equipment is cleaned prior to the guests coming in and between each other. So we are compliant with COVID. And there was a bit of a debate about Marlow House. Now, you said, where is Marlow House? And I said it was in Kent. Well, I've been reassured that it's not actually Kent. It's London, because it's actually Sidcup, which is London. But it's actually Bexley, and Bexley is in Kent. So I'm still none the wiser as to whether it's Kent or London. But I think it's one of those ones where it sits on the map as Kent, but it's the London borough of Sidcup or something along those lines. But either way, it's Marlow House is in Sidcup and Sidcup is in Bexley, and then we'll just leave it at that. We won't put it where. So this episode is more official. It's going to be setting the scene for future episodes with having guests in. Yeah, so I'm going to talk about our guests. We mentioned on the first episode, we kept referring to somebody as her, didn't we?
Yep.
Do you remember? And yep. Her was Liz Chappell.
Just call me Liz.
The borough commander. Well, she is going to be joining us today to talk about her journey in the police. And then we are also going to be joined by another female officer who is in charge of safeguarding, who is going to talk to us about women and girls and safety. So that's what we've got to cover today. What's on your list?
It's a shortened list because I've not been, cue the world's smallest violin, I've not been very well.
Oh.
So I've not been adding to my list as I should, but I've moved.
Yes.
I've moved to a different part of the country.
Was it a plain sailing smooth move or was it a Dan special where
something goes wrong. Well, it was suspiciously going okay until I met with the estate agent to collect my new set of keys for my new house and promptly lost them within maybe 15, 20 minutes.
You got your new door keys to your new house.
Uh-huh.
And within 15 minutes, you lost them.
Uh-huh, yep. So I didn't realise this until I come back from... There's a big Tesco's Extra. So I thought, I need to put some stuff in the cupboards, otherwise I'm not going to be eating. So I quickly went there, came back, laden with shopping. At that point, realised no key to get in. My friend who helped me move wasn't very helpful and said, where did you lose them? Which wound me up no end. I quickly rang the estate agents to see whether they had a spare set. Nope. And then, of course, I just imagined shelling out £200 plus for a locksmith to come out, at which point I thought, let's just retrace my steps and do it.
Which is why people ask you, where do you think you lost them? Because there's normally a last place where you definitely knew that you had them and then trying to retrace.
Yeah, but when you've been moving all your stuff around all day and you're tired and you're just...
I can imagine, yeah.
You're ready to sort of attack anyone that says the wrong thing. That wasn't the right thing to say. It was just leave me alone. Let me have my little tantrum. Let me feel sorry for myself and then, you know, let me get on with it. But I found them. They were wedged between the seats of the removal van.
You'd put them on your lap. They'd fallen off your lap and slid down.
And if I could dance, I would have been dancing in the streets.
Well, you could have danced.
Like no one was watching. Yeah. I would have. But I just scooped up my shopping and sought sanctuary in my new empty house. And I could not have been happier.
Wow. And is that because you found the keys and were relieved for that? Or just
I didn't have to spend £200.
Wow. I'm surprised they didn't give you two sets, or were two sets just on one ring and so you lost everything?
There was a set inside.
Handy.
So it reminds me of yesterday I spoke to my brother and I said, I need to get some ladders for my loft. Can you recommend some ladders? He said, listen, that's a really good idea. And I said, well, can I get the telescopic ones? Because I've got no room to store them, really.
Yeah.
And he said, well, why are you getting the telescopic ones? I said, well, space saving. He said, well, just keep them in the loft. And I thought that's a really good idea. And then I realised
that... But you can't get them up there because they're in the loft.
Exactly.
Unless what he means was get a loft ladder.
Do you think that's what he meant?
Probably, yeah. The hatch has a ladder that you pull down and attached. Although a telescopic ladder is definitely... I've got one and it's...
I'm sure you've got one, Claire.
It didn't surprise you. I've got one and it's a lot better. Uh-huh. To use, because then you can put it whatever height you need.
Well,
and
listen, I just
want to
stuff a Christmas tree up there and get it down a couple of... Well, it's not a couple of times a year, is it?
Well, I don't know.
Once a year.
But the year that we've just had, people was keeping their decorations out until Easter, weren't they? Because they wanted something to celebrate and look at.
Okay,
so,
well, I won't be doing that.
So you're an artificial tree guy, not a real... Tree.
Well, I just can't stand the needles. You're still picking them up in June.
You are, but there's nothing more satisfying than when it all drops on the floor and you hoover it up.
Speaking of hoovers, what have you got?
We've got a shark.
I've got a shark as well.
They are so good.
They're really good, aren't they?
They are extremely better than Dyson. I'm currently on a German Shepherd owner's Facebook group.
Mm-hmm.
And the question comes up all the time. Oh, I'm going to get a new hoover. What would you recommend, a shark or a Dyson? I've had both so I can equally review them, and Shark is 100% better.
Only this morning, you know when you reach the end of a Weetabix box,
yep,
and you've got all the sort of the debris at the bottom. Well, of course, that went all over the floor. Normally, I would have had a bit of a meltdown.
Mm-hmm.
No, not today.
Wow.
I went into the cupboard, took out my shark, fired it up, and I was, you know.
Have you got a cordless one?
Uh-huh, yeah.
Mm, they're good, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
Ours isn't cool. Ours is corded. But they're just Shark 100% all the way.
QVC, today's special value. I tell you.
Well, you do love a QVC.
Mm-hmm. Also, my list of aerials, like, as in television aerials.
Mm-hmm.
So I've bought a listed building.
That's
my new house.
A bit of a problem,
so you can't put anything on the top. You can't have any cable showing. They're really strict. So helpfully, someone said, get an indoor aerial. What is this? And back to the 1970s,
yeah.
Get a coat hanger at the back of the television. What is going on?
Yeah.
And then I looked on Amazon, as you do, and they look quite smart.
Yeah.
But I can't bring myself to buy one. I don't want to be an indoor aerial person.
Well, it depends. Do you not do a lot of streaming? Can you not use your Wi-Fi to be able to connect, use the hub and things like that?
I can, but my television doesn't arrive until Saturday. I've got a strong Wi-Fi, so it should be okay.
You're watching stuff on your phone at the moment, then, are you?
No, I haven't watched television at all. I couldn't open a book, Claire, and read.
You've got hundreds of books, although you have tried to condense your book collection, haven't you?
Well, I can't throw books out. I did see someone recently throw books out into the rubbish. I could never do that.
Mm.
So I've waited until the charity shops have reopened.
Yep.
And I've gone around and just offloaded loads of them. Some of them signed first editions, you know, no rubbish. You know, some of them refuse. They say, no, we've got enough books.
Right. Well, you mentioned TV and you haven't watched anything. Uh-huh. Does that mean then that you haven't watched my suggestion of Behind Her Eyes yet?
The what?
Behind Her Eyes.
Behind, there's a lot. Got a word. So that again, there was too many H's and E's.
Behind Her Eyes.
Behind Her Eyes. No.
Netflix. So you need to add it to your list of things to watch, Dan. I watched your Queen's Gambit, mm-hmm. and we've discussed that last episode.
Claire, I've not got television until Saturday.
Well, watch on your phone then.
I'm not watching things on my phone. I like to sit down and go through my routine, not sitting on my phone watching a miniseries that's 7 hours long. It's ridiculous. Okay.
Well, I'm pleased we've discussed a few things.
Uh-huh.
Shall we get our guests in and speak to them?
Well, I can see them at the door.
Okay.
Clamoring to get here.
After this short break, we will be speaking to our guests. Stay tuned. Okay, so welcome back. We are here with our guests who we've all got set up and ready. Can you introduce yourselves, please? Liz, I'll come to you first. Or Mom, should I say?
No. You know I don't like being called Mom.
And what's your saying? Go on.
Call me Liz.
Liz.
So I'm Liz Chappell. So I'm the BCU commander for the Southwest BCU. Covers four boroughs.
Thank you. We've also got with us...
Hello, Amanda Mawinney. I'm one of the Detective Chief Inspectors on Public Protection on South West.
Welcome. Well, thank you for joining us. I'm going to say hello, 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 because that's my thing.
Hello.
Thank you.
This is new, and I've decided to bring this into the podcast, Dan, so I hope you don't mind, because this is a surprise to you too.
Mm-hmm.
We are going to have a thing where our guests have to do a quiz. It is police-related, so do not worry.
No, I am worried.
So who out of the two of you would like to do this quiz?
I think I can tag team it.
Amanda's clearly going to have the better answer.
Okay, so you've all seen Top Gear, haven't you, when you've got a leaderboard? But this is now going to be a thing where
fastest lap.
Yeah, so this is now going to be a thing with the most amount of questions answered in the time. Now, Dan, can you please put, you want 30 or 60 seconds?
Well, you...
I said 30.
Let's do 30. Let's see how we go.
Let's do 30 seconds. Are you going to tag team it?
Yes. Come on.
Is that allowed under the official rules of this?
I'll make up my own rules. Yeah. Okay, you're going to tag team. Okay, so 30 seconds on the clock.
30 seconds on the clock.
Okay, what does CAD stand for?
Computer-aided dispatch.
Okay. Ooh. Name one handcuffing technique.
Rear stack.
Good. What does DC stand for?
Detective Constable.
At what age can you apply to be a police officer?
Ooh, 18?
17.
No, 17 plus.
Ooh.
Okay.
Can I get a bonus point?
What does SOP stand for?
Standard operating procedure.
Okay, good. Can you tell me what object you can search for under Section 1 of PACE?
Ooh, items linked to theft.
Good. correct. What does BCU stand for?
Borough Command Unit.
Basic Command Unit.
Ooh.
I stole.
How many BCUs do we have?
12.
Good. What does LAS stand for?
London Ambulance Service.
What does ARV mean?
Response vehicle.
Something to do with guns.
How many seconds are we on, Dan?
I've just carried on.
What does AFO stand for?
Authorised Firearms Officer.
Good.
Yes.
And what does CSI stand for?
Crime Scene Investigator.
Good, well done.
I'm going to stop the clock even though.
I have to say that was scary and tiring.
Yeah, so we'll tally up.
I mean, I'm impressed.
Armed response
actually.
Vehicle. Armed response vehicle. Yeah. Clearly armed response vehicle.
Yes.
Edit it in, please.
So what happened to Socos?
Socos? Crimes Officers.
They're called that now, are they?
What? That was 10. 10 out of 11.
10 out of 11.
Yeah. So now
the lion's share was done by.
So you are top of the leaderboard.
Yes.
Well done.
Of one.
Yes. We'll just put leaderboard, it's fine. So in future, all of our guests that come onto the show will just do a quiz and we'll have a little tally in to see who can take the top spot at the end of our series.
Is there a prize clue?
I'm quietly confident.
Yes,
I am as well. I reserve the right to come back though if somebody else beats us.
Oh, okay. Yes, you can have that right. Yes, there will be a prize, but only it's a special prize and it'll be disclosed at the end.
Okay.
So people know.
So if I catch you in the pound shop, I know what you're shopping for.
There's nothing wrong with a pound shop.
Exactly. Thank you, Amanda. Nothing wrong with a pound shop. Thank you. Okay, so let's get back to business. We are here with the Borough Commander, Liz Chappell, with a well-known Just Call Me Liz, which we talked about in our last episode, Liz. How long has that been going on for?
Well, it's been my name since I was born. So that's 48 years ago now. No, call me Liz. So I started with the Met in 2014. Obviously a hierarchical organisation, understandably so. So getting called Mom, and people would say Mom, and I wouldn't recognise it. So I didn't turn around or didn't answer. And I just wanted people to call me Liz. So I just went around saying, call me Liz, call me Liz. People thought I was mad. Probably still do.
And you got known for the old, I just went to go and see the commander the other day or the superintendent. And she said, just call me Liz. And that's what we were going to put on your door, wasn't it? Going to make you a sign, just call me Liz. Yeah. No one is allowed to go in your office unless they are prepared to call you Liz.
Yes, indeed.
Good. L-I-S, not L-I-Z.
Yeah, L-I-S.
L-I-S,
there's
yes.
No A.
What did I say?
L-I.
L-I-A-S. L-I-S.
L-I-S. No, it's Liz.
No, you never said A. No. We'll rewind and check. I'm sure you didn't say A. That's a good thing with the recording. We can check.
Yeah.
Okay, so can you tell us a little bit about your policing journey? You said you joined in 2014. How did you join? Did you join as a police officer? Because that's quite a quick turnaround from a police officer all the way up to borough commander within that short space of time.
Well, I'm very good at my job.
Well, actually,
the first time I was with the Met was in 2009. So in 2009, I joined the Met as a special constable, so a volunteer police officer. I worked in Richmond and Kingston, mostly working on the rugby and also the nighttime economy. And then I joined again in 2014 as a full-time officer, so as my day job, in the direct entry superintendent scheme. It was the first time that it had been run. And so just over 7 years on, and I'm now a chief superintendent and the BCU nice. Commander.
Oh, nice. And the plan was when you joined as a direct entry, it was into a certain rank. Was that always the plan?
Yeah, so you join as, it was a scheme that operated at the time. It actually doesn't operate at the moment in the Met. And you join as a superintendent and you go through a special training program, which is a combination of time at a police college and also time spent with officers learning the different skills you need to each rank. Really supportive officers that I worked with in that time.
Okay, and I hear it was quite competitive, wasn't there? So it wasn't a case of, oh, five people entered, they get it. There was quite a lengthy process with a lot of applicants.
Yeah, so my understanding is that there were 900 applicants nationally, that is, for 9 places. And you went to do a national assessment centre with the College of Policing. And if you were successful of that, then you were interviewed by the force that you wanted to work with.
And you was interviewed by...
knowing look down. So actually the hardest interview I've ever done. So it was a panel interview. So I was interviewed by Sir Bernard Hogan Howe, who was the Met Police Commissioner at the time. And alongside him, there was Assistant Commissioner Helen King, who now works in one of the Oxford universities, and also Assistant Commissioner Martin Hewitt, who now works at the National Police Chiefs Council, and also a member of the public as well.
What do you think swung it for you at that interview? Why do you think they picked you?
I think that Sir Bernard liked people who had opinions about policing and who came across as being really motivated to help make London better. And I almost had an argument with him during the interview. Because he was being really challenging in the way that he was answering questions. And I think that was quite good for me. I think that brought out my passion to do the role. And he knew how hard the role was going to be. He knew that it wasn't terribly well received because it was reasonably political, the scheme. And so he knew that he needed people who were like deeply motivated to do the role and would be quite resilient when they joined.
So you spoke about passion you have for policing in London. You're not a Londoner though, are you?
Well, I'm not in the sense that I was born in Brighton, mm-hmm. And my family moved around the country a lot. So my father's job moved between London and Cardiff. And so as a family, we moved around as well. But actually, I've been in London now since 1995. So London is where I feel my home is. My children have both been born in London and I'm committed to continuing to live in London.
Oh, thank you. And whereabouts do you want to go up to? Are you finished with your rank at the moment of chief superintendent, or have you got bigger dreams?
Well, we all have to have dreams, don't we? But that is a really hard question, actually. So I worked in the private sector before I came into policing. And, not to generalise, but it's the kind of atmosphere where, you know, it's very competitive and it is about, driving forwards, earning more money, having a bigger role. And one of the reasons I wanted to come into policing was because it's much more of a vocation. So I wanted to, it sounds very trite, but I wanted to come in and help people and do good things. It's possible that being more senior might be a byproduct of doing those good things, but it's absolutely not the thing that motivates me. So I don't have any preconceived ideas, actually, about what rank I want to finish at.
But you'll still keep Just Call Me Liz, no matter how high you go.
I will. And, Cress. So, our fantastic commissioner. Yeah. She asks people to call her Cress.
Well, I've met her a few times, and when I said hi, Mum, she didn't say just call me Cress. So, Mum, if you're listening, next time you meet me, I can call you Cress.
Well, you did doorstep her.
I did.
I literally did
stop her. And if any of you have seen it, the International Women's Day video that was filmed for the Southwest BTU by myself and the Commissioner is in the video.
Yeah.
And it was a spur of the moment. Saw her in the car park and stopped her and said, "Right, can I have a few minutes of your time?" And managed to get her in there, and she's phenomenal because that speech that she gave was just off the cuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was very, very good. But yeah, I'm like a barricade. Oh no, you aren't going to get past me unless you do something for me. So. Wonderful. Well, thank you, Liz. And Amanda, what rank are you?
I'm just past my detective chief inspectors.
Wow. Okay. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. I'm very privileged and proud.
Oh shit! One.
That was. Yeah. I was going to say that was more than last.
So, okay, congratulations, well
thank
done.
Thank you.
So your path is very different to Liz.
It is.
Yeah, so can you tell us about when you joined and what your path has been so far?
So I joined this wonderful job in 2002. And at that point you attended Hendon. You had 18 weeks training and I moved from Northern Ireland. So obviously I stayed at the weekend. So I was frequent at the Cladder Ring, if people remember that. Mm-hmm. And I had a wonderful time. It was an amazing, enjoyable experience. And, you know, when I joined the job, we hear it a lot. And I think, Liz, you just said the same thing. We join to make a difference. And we want to make a difference to people's lives. And that's still completely true. I think we all have that at the essence of it. And that's what I joined for. And thankfully, I think we all do each day.
Wow. And you're a detective. So when did you go from the uniform role into the detective sort of role? Did you always have that dream? Was that always your plan?
No, absolutely not. So my first posting was Paddington Green, which obviously is now no longer, but an absolutely incredible place to work. And when you worked at Paddington Green, I was obviously on response team, but you had to do kind of attachments to different parts of policing. So you would have to do 6 weeks in the front office, you would have to do 6 weeks as jailer, you would have to do 6 weeks in security back gate, and another thing was 6 weeks on beat crimes as it was then. And I remember going to beat crimes kicking and screaming because I loved being on response team. I loved being out in the area car, and that's what I wanted to do. But I went to beat crimes and got a real love for investigation, and I never went back. It's where I stayed, and I went on to become a TDC and then a detective.
Wow, okay. And so you've always, so since then, you've always liked the more investigating behind the scenes rather than the initial on scene, because the uniform deal with the investigations right from sort of the 999 call. You like doing the behind the scenes stuff with CCTV and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, you can see a lot of it behind the scenes, but equally our role is having an impact on people's lives as well. You know, I work in safeguarding. It's what officers do every day as detectives as well. You are there for people, engaging with them. them, you know, building that rapport, you know, trying to engage them and make them feel that they can, you know, report crimes, engage in the criminal justice process. So I think we're still very much hands-on as our frontline colleagues are.
So you head up which
public protection.
Public protection.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you had to describe public protection to somebody non-police, what would you say to them so they get a good idea about what you cover?
So I think it's about engagement, prevention, investigation. It's about partnership working. It's about how we can all work together to achieve the best outcome we possibly can for children and adults. In a nutshell, that's how I would describe it.
And how many people work under public protection?
Oh my goodness, we have so many units. It's divided into public protection investigations and hubs. So under investigations, we have child abuse, we have domestic abuse, and we have rape investigation. And then under the hub my side, we have mental health, missing persons, multi-agency safeguarding hubs, county lines, child sexual exploitation. And if I didn't say missing persons, then that's in there as well. So that it covers a vast array of crimes and investigations.
Okay, so is this an area that you've been involved in many years?
Yes, so I was a DC, SAFR, DC, CSU as it was then, domestic abuse, DS. I mean, my kind of, most of my career trajectory has involved safeguarding, absolutely.
So I've been, this is my 16th or 17th year in the job.
Yeah.
The last couple of years, I've just heard so much emphasis in what we do is around public protection.
Yeah.
Why do you think it's just taken off in such a way that it has over the last few years? What have been those key points that have made it where we are today?
I don't know. Maybe we're putting an emphasis on the word because we've always done it. Always been there. Those units have always existed. So perhaps it was more of a rebranding. You know, sometimes we know that our conviction rates around rape investigation, for example, maybe aren't as good as they should be. Maybe with domestic abuse as well. And we really want the public to feel that they can trust us and engage with us and know that we have a focus on it.
I think for me, if I can just come in, it's around the fact that lots of the crimes that we're talking about are kind of hidden from public view.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's violence out on the street, then it's really visible to people. But when it's violence or mistreatment happening in homes, sometimes that's viewed differently. And sometimes, you know, in the past, that was viewed as a bit more of a private matter. But I think we're realising now that, you know, as police officers and members of the public, we've all got a part to play. So if we see something that's worrying us about how a person might be treated, sharing that information is going to help someone. And I just think we're much better at that now.
Well, yeah, I think it's interesting you said that because it's things that, like, when we used to walk home, you used to expect that something might happen to you or someone might say something and you just accepted it. It was one of those things. But now it's re-educating to say that isn't actually acceptable for that to happen. It shouldn't happen. And to report it. And I think years ago, you wouldn't report it to the police because the police aren't going to do anything about it or wouldn't have done anything about it. Whereas these days now, we are going to do it. Having that information builds on intelligence and we can form a map around the areas and can't we with stuff like that. So
yeah, and what an awful culture though to live in where that people have that element of fear. And I think what I will say about that, you know, violence against women and girls is one of our key priorities for safety in London. And we have a strategy with measures to prevent it. We want to tackle perpetrators and we really want to protect and support our victims. On South West, Liz, I'm sure you agree, we have a real focus and working with our partners and our community to tackle domestic abuse, sexual assaults, harmful practices and stalking, to name a few. And it's a perfect opportunity to bring in the fact that on the 13th of May, the Metropolitan Police is holding a day of action and we will really focus on activities around our open spaces, prevention work with our community and partner engagement, identifying and arresting our high harm offenders. We'll be holding virtual events. Our safer neighbourhood teams will be engaging with community groups. We'll be delivering lessons on personal safety and self-defence and we'll be distributing panic alarms. Our licensing teams are engaged in this as well and they'll be liaising with our licensed premises and encouraging them to support the Ask Angela initiative, which has obviously been ongoing as well. And our schools teams are giving presentations in schools around staying safe, consent, sexually harmful behaviour and child sexual exploitation. And just to know, our local authorities and our community safety partnerships do play a critical role in helping us deliver these services. And I would ask that no one suffers hours in silence, and we keep encouraging people to report to the police. But there are other support services available. People want to talk, and I'd encourage people to reach out.
Wow, thank you. You certainly got your work cut out on that day.
Yeah,
a lot going on.
We all do.
What's out of interest? What sort of agencies? You mentioned some other people. Who are we working with to accomplish this?
Okay, so we have our Violence Against Women and Girls groups. We have domestic abuse national helplines and local services. We have rape crisis. You know, we have our local Haven centres. There's lots, you know, there's so many different elements to this, but there are national and local support services there that can support.
You mentioned one, Ask Angela.
Yes.
What's all that about?
So that's about if you are feeling threatened as a female or a male within an environment, that you can use a code word or signs, and that licensed premises will pick up on that and obviously help and provide assistance if required or call police.
Oh, that's very interesting.
I suppose when those bars start reopening, what's it from the 17th of May, isn't it? The bars start to reopen.
And all licensed premises are trained in this. Is it just for licensed premises, or is it for pharmacies or shops and things like that?
So Ask Angela, licensed premises. Many are trained. Couldn't sit here and say all, but many. And there is actually a separate scheme that's running in pharmacies. I won't name any of them, but the local pharmacy is called Ask Annie. So very similar concept. So that's something that was really useful during lockdown, because of course the licensed premises weren't open, but places that were, that people were going, were pharmacies. So again, very similar. So it's just really publicising these places people can go. But of course, you know, just obviously to say, people can always call us, and we would like them to call us.
So lots going on. How can people find out exactly when, where and how? Is it the usual social media channels?
Yeah, we'll be publicising on Twitter, Facebook. It'll be on our local authority pages, partnership pages. It's being led by Detective Chief Inspector Figo Furasan, who will make sure that communications go out and the appropriate links with community, so we can involve as many people as possible.
And what do you hope to achieve? What would be a good day for you?
Oh my goodness, a good day is that people feel safe to walk the streets, and that we provide the support that they need, and that they feel confident that we're there to support them and guide them through any investigations.
And of course, just to say, it's not just a one day thing. So there'll be lots to see on the 13th. And we'll be talking about it a lot on the 13th. But this is something that we focus on every single day as well.
Okay, thank you. And Amanda, I know you mentioned about education in schools.
Yes.
Are we just educating girls, or are we educating boys about, one, their own safety, but also about what effect they can have on others, being, without wanting to be intimidating, but realising how their actions can affect somebody else?
Absolutely. It's got to be for boys and girls. You know, the whole issue of consent comes into this. Misogyny, sexual harassment, those are issues for, you know, all genders, or how you perceive yourself. So absolutely, we will be delivering this to everyone in schools.
Okay, thank you.
I'm just thinking back to when I joined. I don't think it was even conceivable that as an organisation we would be sort of putting on such an event with such a big platform to such a big audience. And, you know, that's only, you know, it's not that long ago, really. You know, as an organisation, we have made some big steps.
Yeah, we have. And I think we've made big steps in every area. But we've got to remember our environment continually changes. So we have to continually change and adapt with that. And we have to listen to what our communities want as well. And we have to respond to that. So maybe that's the difference.
Mm. Yeah. Do you think it's quite different because we've got four old school boroughs here? Do you think the target audience and educating is going to be different across the BCU?
I think the message has got to be the same, hasn't it? But we do accept that, you know, there are different communities within different areas of London, and I suppose we need to respond to that as well. But with this, I think the message is clear, regardless of where you live, and it's worldwide, isn't it? It's not just here.
Well, yeah, it's very true. I mean, being on response, I remember going to mainly domestic calls, and what is accepted in some cultures as ordinary life isn't accepted in our culture, and we sit and think, surely they can't control you doing this, but for them it's normal because it's their culture to be controlled by their partners, and that's always quite hard to deal with as a response officer. So we're encouraging everybody to come forward regardless of what culture you come from or country you come from.
Absolutely. And we have agencies and charities and volunteers that can assist with people from lots of different backgrounds and really help support them and guide them through that process. And you know, there is going to be fear, and it's important that we recognise that and understand that as well, and just try and engage with people as much as we can.
All right, thank you.
Okay, well, it's in my diary.
Yes.
I'll be looking out.
Yeah. So what, if someone's listening, what one thing would you say to somebody scared or worried about telling the police? What one thing would you say to them about coming forward to us?
Don't suffer in silence. And also, you know, there are people that maybe don't want to report it to the police, but I would say there are other support networks available. And if there is a reason why they don't want to, I would want to know what that reason is, to be honest. You know, where's the trust and how can we engage with that? So don't suffer in silence is what I would say.
Okay, thank you. On a completely different note, what series are you watching on Netflix at the moment?
Oh my goodness.
Or any other streaming platforms that are out there?
So I've just finished On Forgotten, which is amazing.
Yes.
And I don't normally watch police programs because, as you know, you get frustrated and you shout at the screen and say that.
So you haven't been watching Line of Duty then?
Haven't looked at it at all. Got no idea who H is. So, but yeah, I've watched On Forgotten, which is, you know.
Steps, isn't
he?
That's who I know it is. But that's obviously missing persons investigations are quite old, and I work in missing persons, so it's fascinating.
Okay, and you, Liz, what are you watching on streaming at the moment?
A Spanish program about cable girls in the 1920s. Jeez.
Wow. And then just
says it all, doesn't it?
I knew it wouldn't be a common thing. You know, when you go onto your Netflix or whatever, it comes up at the cross recommended by you. I would love to see. We should do that in the next series, is get people to open up their Netflix and see what the suggested type things for them to be. Because
I don't think that's a good idea at all.
For me, Netflix always gets it right. Amazon Prime, completely off the mark.
Okay, wonderful.
I haven't had television for 2 weeks.
You're missing out. But what have you got to watch?
You said it earlier. I've forgotten already.
I'll remind you, Behind Her Eyes.
Behind her eyes.
It's okay. Good.
Yeah, I've heard it's good.
It is good. Okay, well, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
After this short break, we'll be right back.
Claire, I enjoyed today's recording.
So did I. It was good, wasn't it?
What did we learn?
Well, it was nice to actually have... I've never met Amanda before, so it was nice to have her.
I've emailed her.
Yep.
And of course, I didn't realise she had a Northern Ireland accent. Not that I'd pick that up.
You're not going to pick that up in an email. You're not going to pick that up in an email, are you? Yeah, there's no way to do that. But yes, I think it's really nice speaking to both of them and seeing their career paths and how different they are. And obviously, there are many different opportunities and ranks and roles within the police, so it's good that they're on two separate journeys, which is good.
She has a lot of responsibility. Public protection.
It's a huge public protection is the umbrella, and below that is a lot of investigations and a lot of areas too.
There was some of them that I'd heard of. Many of those departments that she has responsibility for, I'd never heard of.
Yeah, she definitely has a lot. So there's a lot happening on the 13th, which is good.
Yeah.
And also that is going to continue into the future as well. So it's not just on the 13th.
It's ordinary policing duties, really, isn't it? Looking after people.
It is business as usual.
Yes, indeed.
If you would like to contact us, we've realised that you can't actually put a comment on podcasts. So for us to say, please put a comment, you can't unless you are going to listen to it on YouTube. You'll have to email into us. And our email address is swplodcast@met.police.uk. Please email in any suggestions and any topics that you would like us to discuss or talk about in future episodes. This is the podcast on the Southwest BCU by Dan and CJ.
Until next time.
Goodbye.
Bye.